Good afternoon, folks. Today we're going to touch on 10 topics. We're also going to... The first topic is custody and international transport of minor children when you pass away. So if you have children in the U.S. And you're here with you, minor children, all of you know that we put wills together for you. You also know that we have named guardians, and many of you have said, I want my children to go back to England, back to Canada, a very typical one. They've come down from Toronto or other places in Canada, and they say, look, we're here for X amount of years, but our whole family is back home. I want the children back to Hong Kong, back to Tokyo. Many of these examples. So what we have done in our wills, as you know, is we've never said that your guardians are from Japan, your guardians are from any foreign country. We identify the guardian, and we state very clearly in there that wherever the guardian lives, the children can go. Why did we do this? You'll remember, because if your children were born here as U.S. citizens, the surrogates court and other authorities may view your child differently and say this is a future taxpayer, this is a future person in the military, these are citizens, we have to approach them differently. What we don't want is your children being caught in a group home until they get relief from the surrogates court to allow your children to go with grandparents or siblings in a foreign country. So we just say, I hereby name Joe and Sally Smith. They are the guardians, and the children can go with them wherever they want, number one. Number two is we name local guardians, friends in the community. Some of you, when you first came here, had very few connections, and so that was a little bit more of a challenge. But we want local people that can be in charge until your family comes. So, again, your children would not be left in the hands of some governmental authority. We want them in loving hands, in caring hands. The third thing that's critical is that we want your children's passports to be kept current. I can't tell you how many times, and that's a stressful situation in itself, when we've heard clients just going on an international trip and their children's passports have expired. My three children will travel overseas this summer, and their passports are set to expire next month. We've got to get on it. That's bad. But when your family members are trying to get that child back overseas and the passport has expired, and we have not been fully disclosing to the governmental authorities that there's been a death and so forth, we'll have our hands full. So make sure that the passports are kept current. So that, number one is make sure that your loved one's children are taken care of. Number two, as you know, as U.S. citizens, if you pass away and you leave your assets to your spouse, there is no tax. That is the unlimited marital deduction. That says that your surviving spouse has lost their soulmate, has lost their key person in life, that they should not pay a tax. It dates back to the Reagan era when they disposed of any tax between husband and wife. As non-citizens, you know that you don't enjoy that benefit. Why? Because the U.S. government says that when you pass away, the surviving spouse will take those assets in their knapsack and the two children under each arm and head back to the country of their origin. And many of you have indicated you want your spouse to do that because the cost of living is less and you feel that that would be appropriate. As you become more firmly entrenched here and your children are here, that may not be the case. But regardless, your surviving spouse will be subject to tax because the U.S. government says once your spouse has disconnected themselves from the U.S. and no longer has any connections, and there are more on that topic in a few moments, they will be subject to the tax. How do we avoid that? We create a trust for your surviving spouse, and that trust is called a qualified domestic trust. Your wills are all very well built out to include how that trust should work. But again, we want to remind you that if you pass away and you leave these assets to your spouse, they will there have to be a U.S. trustee who is the trustee. If there's over $2 million, there has to be an institutional trustee on there. If you take principal out of the trust, you need to know that you're going to be paying estate tax on that, because the U.S. government says, well, you set up this QDOT trust, you put $3 million in, and then you took $1 million out, and that money then went back to the country of your origin, and we're never going to see it, so we're taxing you on that now. You can become a citizen after your spouse passes away, and that will relieve you of the requirements that the QDOT trust has. And I encourage you to at least run through that analysis if your spouse passes away, or tell your friends to do that as well. You can also create a QDOT even if it's not inside your will, but that is very tricky after the spouse passes away. It has a world to do with what's going on with, hang on just one second. It has a world to do with whether or not you in the future think that you would want to give up your citizenship. So keep those pieces in mind, okay? Now, what we often recommend our clients do is to consider life insurance, and there'll be more on that topic a little bit later as well, and to put that into a trust. That will create a liquidity event for your surviving spouse. You all have considered that, and many have correctly employed it. Please tell that to friends and family as well. Okay, that will ensure that that money is not subject to QDOT. It will ensure that you're not required to file tax returns if you take principal out, and you can take, you don't have to have an institutional trustee, and you can move that money offshore. Number three, planning for estate tax on principal distributions. So we've talked about this piece. What happens if the QDOT is set up? And we've explained to all of you that if the QDOT is set up and you're taking principal out of the trust, then you have an issue, because you're going to have to pay estate tax on that piece. In the past, I've always said to you, if you get additional life insurance, then you're in a position where there'll be enough income from your current assets and the assets that from the life insurance to generate enough income so that between the two of them, there should not be a need to take out principal. Is that a guarantee? No. And that's a big issue for us, because you still can take principal out of the trust if necessary. Suppose it's 2008 again, and the income generated from the trust is not sufficient to live from, and there's been a 25% erosion in the portfolio. You can take out principal if you demonstrate hardship. You have to show that your other assets, like your real estate or a closely held business that's not generating income, is not giving you money, and therefore you need to take principal out of the trust. It is not a position you want to be in, but at least know that you have some relief on that. Some clients have, and now we're on to topic four, some clients say, I want to move assets into my spouse's name so that this way, if I die, those assets are not subject to the QDOT rules. That has been a notoriously popular strategy. Some of our most more sophisticated relationships in the financial industry have said, look, I'm going to have my wife own my policy, and I'm going to own her policy, and then if she passes away on the life insurance, no tax. A good strategy, but not complete in our minds, because what happens is, in the meantime, if you pass away, or if your wife passes away and she owns your policy, now she has an asset of insurance. We don't think that that's the best approach. That is a very good approach if there's no trust and estates lawyer in the place. We think you should have your insurance inside of a trust, leave your spouse as the primary beneficiary, and then your children. You avoid the non-U.S. citizen issues. You avoid, if your wife predeceases you, that the money can go down to your children. You can move assets to your spouse each year, up to $139,000, and you may remember in the early years when we were doing planning for you all, you could move $100,000 between husband and wife. Well, now it's up to $139,000. The only issue to be mindful of is when you move the assets over, this is not the area that we practice, but sometimes divorce lawyers say well, you know what, anything that you move over into the spouse's name is now going to be declared as his or hers, whoever is the recipient. And so some clients say no. The other reason that people don't move the assets over is because they say, the more that I leave to my spouse in trust, the more that's protected from her. And the more that's protected from my spouse's new spouse when she or he remarries and then passes away. So moving the assets to avoid the non-U.S. citizen QDOT rules, you have been advised in the past, and we continue to support not necessarily moving those assets today. At one point, we had a client purchasing a large property, and what he did, what we had his wife do, was buy that property from him buy that once, and then every year forgive a portion of the debt up to the annual husband and wife exemption amount. Those things we can talk more about if you're interested. The good news here is that we have a $5 million exemption that we can take advantage of if both the husband and wife pass away. I'm on to topic four. Topic four is estate planning for foreign assets. Okay, so here is the set of facts. We have U.S. citizens and U.S. residents with assets in foreign countries. Okay, those assets are subject to estate tax. My wife's family has assets overseas. If my wife inherits those assets from her family, who are non-resident, non-citizens, my wife and those assets will not be subject to estate tax. Again, if you have family members who are non-residents, non-citizens, and they own property overseas and they leave it to you, there'll be no estate tax. Why? Because maybe that country is having an estate tax, and irrespective of it, whether it does or it doesn't, the answer is those assets pass to you free of tax. Now, my wife has assets overseas that her father, who is a U.S. citizen, but splits his time between the U.S. and overseas, when he passes away, those foreign assets will be subject to tax. We talked about this a little bit before. That's because as a U.S. citizen, your assets worldwide are subject to estate tax irrespective of where they are. A very important concept that we have brought up to all of you in the past, and this is a foreshadowing because in the past I've said to you, you need to know your assets worldwide when you die are subject to estate tax. Now you need to know that your assets worldwide are subject to reporting to King Herod in Rome, because today we must let the U.S. government know where your assets are and what you're doing, even if there is no income tax or gift tax due today. Next topic, okay? But on finishing on this piece, most of the countries, and I'll list them quickly for you, have treaties with us, most of the developed tax systems. And so if there is an estate tax in that foreign country for your parents or for assets that you have overseas, you'll get a credit against the assets you have here. So Australia, beginning with A, Austria, Denmark, Finland, France, Germany, Greece, Ireland, Italy, Japan, Netherlands, Norway, South Africa, Switzerland, and the UK. So what happens is in those countries where we have a treaty that we avoid a double taxation, because if you pay a tax in the country where the asset is sited, is located, real estate for example, you'll get a credit on the tax you pay here. You have to look at each treaty and see the language of it. We're happy to help. We're happy to help your friends and family. You also need to know, and we'll finish on this point, that if you have a foreign investment company, okay, where you have, or your family members have, where you have deferred gain on a sale of a business, and we have clients throughout the Caribbean who have set up trust companies there where they've sold businesses, the assets have gone into an account there, they do not pay the full gain, but every year the earnings off of those accounts, they pay income tax. If that you die, and you name your brother who's overseas because he split the accounts with you and not your children in the U.S., we have an issue because the U.S. government was fine with the way that trust was set up, and you pay the income. But now that your brother, it's been diverted to him, we'll no longer be able to collect the tax as the U.S. government, and so we have a much more complicated set of facts on taxation. If you have offshore accounts where you're gaining, you know, a passive foreign investment company, you must please be mindful that when doing that planning or when your friends are, that you should keep U.S. citizens as the beneficiaries on them, or we've got complex issues. We can talk more about that. Let's talk about non-resident aliens with U.S. property, okay? So here is a situation where New York City, Miami Beach, maybe L.A., maybe some other areas that are developing are white-hot as trophy areas for the super wealthy. We see the Brazilians, we see Israelis, we see Germans, English, French, Italians, Asians for sure, Chinese are buying properties in the city. It is their only connection in the U.S. When they purchase that property, that asset on U.S. soil will be subject to gift tax, estate tax when they pass away. There is a strategy where they can set up a foreign corporation and they can potentially avoid the tax because the property which was real property now becomes intangible property. Real property is only real estate. Assets inside of a foreign corporation will be considered intangible property, an essential element that may put us in a position to avoid estate tax for that client who's had their assets overseas, is not a citizen, not a resident, but wants to avoid the tax in the U.S. When they sell that property, and it's inside a vehicle like this, they are subject to backup withholding because they always have to pay the gains tax, but they and that may be well worth the investment because they've avoided the potential estate tax. In the event that that client plans to migrate to the U.S., so we have clients, for example, years back where you guys have come to the U.S. and you said, now I'm bringing my mother-in-law, now I'm bringing my mother, now I'm bringing my brother who has a business overseas. There is some great planning that can be done prior to coming to the U.S. This is a very, very important concept, though, because they need to make gifts, and they can make gifts of property, provided it's not U.S. property, if they're property overseas, to you and your children before they come, including setting up trusts. And that will assist in avoiding estate tax when they die and certainly gift tax if they decide to make their gifts when they're here. We call this pre-immigration planning, and for many of you, this is an important concept when you're thinking about someone overseas coming over here and disconnecting themselves or at least becoming a U.S. resident on this side. Do the gifting before they get here. We're on the next topic, which is inheriting international assets as a U.S. citizen. So this goes back to the point when I was speaking about before with my wife. If she inherits assets from non-U.S., non-resident individuals overseas, she will not be subject to estate tax, okay? She does, if the assets are over $100,000, she does have to file Form 3520. Why is that important? Because the IRS is happy for you to accept those assets because now they will be on U.S. soil, they will be what we call performing, and when they produce an income, then you will find yourself in a position where you have to pay tax, and they're happy about it. Furthermore, once it's now integrated into the U.S. tax system, when you die, those assets will also be subject to estate tax. You, however, must make this filing. So you can high-five each other when you know you've inherited assets overseas, but you must be mindful that the U.S. government, the long arm of that law, is saying we want to know about it because from this point forward, it's going to be on your balance sheet for reporting and also potentially for taxes if there are earnings. Okay. Last two big topics on this call we want to speak about. The first is annual reporting requirements. For many of you, you have found this to be one of the most stressful sets of facts because you've kept assets overseas, and now you know you have to report them. The biggest one that we were worried about that we've gotten relief from is when you have a piece of property overseas, a residence. We believed, and it was before the final regulations came out, that you were going to have to disclose that. We now know that you do not. However, take caution, because if you rent that property overseas, the IRS classifies that as a contract with a foreign person, and now that is required to be disclosed. So if you're renting and you're publicly disclosing it, if you're renting and you're putting the income on your returns because you are extremely responsible and fastidious as you're supposed to be, then know that that is a requirement where you have to disclose separately that you have that asset overseas. Let's talk about the most important one that you've all heard about, and that is the Foreign Bank and Financial Accounts Reporting Act, and that's FBAR. You've heard that 100 times in the past couple of years. Now you have to have these filed by June 30th if you have accounts that have in total over $10,000. If I had a dime for every one of your clients or your financial advisors who said, well, my clients have three accounts with $9,500, do we not have to report? The answer is they look at the total. What your advisors and you have been thinking is, well, if I take $9,500 and I wire it into an account overseas, then it's not reported to the government. The wiring of that money is different about reporting. The IRS now wants to know now that if you have a total of more than $10,000 and they're looking for the highest balance during any given year of all your accounts overseas, you have to file. So if you have been what you believe to be very fastidious each year at picking up the interest on your foreign accounts, which has become so common and so responsible, that is not enough. That is your income tax return. It shows good faith that you're demonstrating it, but you're not letting them know what is in that account and how much is in there. Your accountant, for example, doesn't know what your net worth is. He just knows what your income is. The IRS knows that you earn $8,000 overseas in a given year, which you reported, but they don't know what's in it. FBAR now says you have to file. Number two is that if you have foreign stocks or securities held overseas, these assets as well must be filed under Form 8938 if you have more than $50,000. Okay? The FBAR account requirement says all bank accounts, and it includes foreign assets, but now financial assets overseas. But you also have to file Form 8938 if you have a securities account, for example, with more than $50,000. So you must keep this in mind as well. We're also, before I get to the third disclosure, you also know that we're coming up now on the third amnesty program. There are some people we've heard through the rumor mill that are saying they want to avoid the amnesty program, and rather than disclose all their assets and pay the penalty for that so that they can avoid jail time, et cetera, they've said, let's just quietly disclose all of our assets and hope the IRS doesn't pick it up and let then the statute of limitations run and then they can't come back. We think that's a risky game. We do not subscribe to it. None of you who we represent right now do we know of that even have foreign accounts that you haven't disclosed. And again, that's why many of the topics on today's call is for you to tell your friends and family that it is essential that they take advantage of this amnesty program right now and to disclose. This is the third one, but be mindful, every time there is an amnesty program, they take a greater penalty and a larger percentage of the total amounts that are under management, the account. It could be north of 25% or 30% in the next amnesty program. So the sooner that you do it, also if you don't do it, you risk that you get caught. And if you get caught after three amnesty programs not taking advantage of them, they're going to spank you. And it's going to be serious. number one. Number two is the penalties are greater. Okay? Number three, we would encourage you to tell friends and family to avoid the quiet disclosures. We think that's a risky business, particularly now when you have amnesty. Okay, the last reporting requirement right now, this deals with, and it's Form 3520, when you are have transactions with a foreign trust, okay, what does this mean? Well, if you have, you are beneficiary of a trust overseas, and we'll talk about that in a moment, and there's no income that's necessarily being disclosed, that in itself may say, I don't need to file. But the answer that's generated, and it's in a trust, the answer is you do have to file, and we'll talk about more of that in a minute. But the one very important piece for those of you who still have who have family but still have accounts in Canada, Canada's account form, which is the what they call tax-free savings accounts, they're like our IRAs, or more like our Roth IRAs. They compound free of tax. It's a great savings plan, and since there is no tax, there's no earnings, there's no tax due, the U.S. government imposes that you must let us know that. Why? Because the U.S. government thinks that maybe you could have, with a compounding free of tax, $10, $20, $50, $100,000 or $1 million in your retirement account up there, and without them knowing that, they cannot, when you pass away, confirm that this is an asset of your estate. Remember, your assets worldwide are subject to tax. So in the past, Canadians could say, look, I haven't disclosed this, I didn't make income, I wasn't required to disclose it, nobody knows I have an IRA account up there. It's not a gig that we would do. We would always have the executors and trustees sign indicating on a tax return, an estate tax return, that you have these assets because you get a credit with Canada because we have a treaty. But today, you must disclose those accounts. Canadians, get you need to get on your horse on this topic and check with your accountants, okay? Now let's move on to foreign trusts. By the way, one other very important concept here, and we'll talk about it right now, is life insurance. So earlier on we were talking about assets overseas. What happens if you surrender your green card? 8 out of the last 15 years, if you are surrender it before your 8th year, you'll be in a situation where you can then just be considered a visa holding non-resident non-citizen. You must formally go to the embassy and surrender the card. You cannot just let it expire. You must let them know that if you are going to clearly let them know you're under the 8 years. It is not common for our clients to give up their green cards because they want to protect their access to their children who are here. They want to continue to ensure their access for what I would like to believe is among the greatest health care in the world. They want to continue to be able to visit the U.S. in all places and not have any risk that the drawbridge goes up under any kind of period of war that we may have. So it is unlikely. But if you do not want to be subject to the taxation as a as what we call a covered expatriate, which is someone who we spoke about before, has more than $2 million and has the income in excess of $151,000 average over 5 years, you need to do that before your 8th year. Now, let's say during this time we had met and I had said to you all, I support you having life insurance as a liquidity event. We saw many of these people in the World Trade Center who had life insurance. We have a client recently now that's heading back to Mexico. They had life insurance here. They go back to Mexico, and when they're there, if they die, their insurance is not included in their estate, even though they bought it in the U.S., even though they bought a U.S. product, they dealt with sophisticated financial advisors, of which we have the best in the world here, and so they do not have to worry about that being included in their estate. A very important piece. But when you give up your citizenship or you give up your green card and you go overseas if your children are living in the U.S. and you leave your assets to them, be mindful. This is a tremendous penalty. They tax you at the highest rate. They do not give you exemptions. Like you currently have a $5 million exemption on the federal level. We think that that is evaporating. Another topic for another day. But you must know that if you retain people in the U.S., this is a key critical piece. If you're going to leave it to them, they're going to be hit very hard with tax. The second piece to be mindful with, and we have clients who are in Turkey. They were extremely wealthy. Their child was born in the U.S. They was a U.S. citizen. They wanted, that child was about to inherit money. They knew that then that child would pay tax if they gave up citizenship. So they moved to give up citizenship of that child before the child turned 18. If you have children in the U.S. that you want to move off of U.S. citizenship, you, even though you do that before they're 18 years of age, it is essential to know that it's difficult and that they have a small window to regain that citizenship after they turn 18 because the government feels that they were not acting on their own. So it is not a simple matter to give up citizenship if you're a green card holder after you're here more than eight out of 15 years. The second piece is if you're a green card holder, we know that you're subject to assets tax worldwide if you pass away. But suppose you're not a green card holder. Suppose we represent many people who come over on an expat visa for a handful of years. Then they decide to stay in the U.S. Then they give up their club membership in the U.K. and they give up their house. And they join a church here. And they travel consistently and their kids are in schools here. Every indication they're staying, right? Even though they are not a green card holder, even though they are not a U.S. citizen, they are can be considered a domiciliary. It is a tough test, but nonetheless, they can still be considered a domiciliary and subject to the U.S. estate tax rules here. So think hard before you make a decision to stay here more than 8 years as a green card holder. Think hard about becoming a green card holder. Think hard that if you're not a green card holder and you are just on a work visa, that after a period of years you still may be deemed to be a U.S. Resident or domiciliary, rather, for estate tax purposes. Final topic. If there are trusts overseas that were set up for you, and we have many clients that are in situations like this, where you are a beneficiary of these trusts, okay? So Grandma and Grandpa set something up in the U.K. They have it on the island of Jersey or the Channel Islands, and you are named, okay? You have a reporting requirement every year, and you're subject to paying income tax. If you don't, because all the earnings continue to accrue inside the trust, but you have not received them, that ignorance of not filing does not exempt you, and you will be subject to what we call the throwback rules. So we ran a quick calculation, say there was $1 million in the trust, and it grew to $2 million, and you never filed and you never paid taxes, and then you decided to take $600,000 out after it had grown to $2 million 10 years later from this trust that was overseas. You will not only be subject to a throwback tax, which will be over $140,000 on that $600,000, but an interest charge of another $280,000 plus. Before you're done, $600,000 comes out, over $420,000 will be subject to tax just back in the envelope calculation. The point here is that foreign trusts with you as a U.S. beneficiary will still be subject to tax and reporting requirements.